Show me love, show me love.
Guys, welcome back to episode 3 of the Just Play podcast with your co-host, Andy Aitken, and obviously with our founder, director, and great guy of the tennis world, Ryan Trickey. Buddy, how are you this week?
Yeah, I'm very good, mate. How are you?
Yeah, very, very good, thank you. You've been catching up on the tennis recently?
Yeah, I think we've, definitely, obviously, after Jack Draper last week and now Emma Raducanu. I think this is a bit of a topic of conversation, isn't it? Just seeing how she's got to, well, was the first last 16, wasn't it? In the US Open, or Miami, sorry. And the last 8 now. So she's doing really well, actually. Have you seen
it? Seems to be... No, obviously, yeah, I haven't unfortunately seen her play too much, apart from obviously the casual highlights, obviously on YouTube or Sky Sports, but... Something seems to have clicked, whether, just something mentally or physically, or, again, obviously there's been lots of structural changes in terms of coaches. I think she had a trial period with a coach, didn't she, just between Indian Wells and Miami. So something seems to have clicked, and, all the best to her. Hopefully she, rediscovers something, and, as British tennis supporters, I'm sure we always want the best for our homegrown players, don't we, really?
Absolutely, yeah, and, it's good to see that she's... she's doing well, and hopefully that can continue for, future years. She kind of stays injury-free because that has hampered her quite a bit in the past, hasn't it? So, obviously, the struggles of the game. But, it's interesting we kind of talk about it, Emma, because, that kind of rolls on to a little bit of what we're talking about today, doesn't it? So, it'd be great if we had Emma Raducanu right here just to chat away to us and say, well, come on, what was it look like when you were, a kid? And... I think it would be good just to talk a little bit about, obviously, coaching, I suppose, the then and nows, isn't it, really? The last 25 years or so,
25, God. I can't even remember it, but isn't it?
I've got quite a good memory of it, actually. And that's probably a talking point, isn't it? Like, in terms of my mum was my first coach, so... I remember it, where we were, when we were coaching, roughly. So I think it's a great, interesting topic of conversation just to kind of open up a little bit and, maybe just talk a little bit about, because, we might have different opinions, I suppose. We might have similar opinions, and it might draw on some interesting stuff for people to, and the world to learn about, I suppose.
Yeah, so... I guess we sort of, as you allude to, we're talking about then and now, and I think we're probably speaking, for those that are listening, probably actually at the start of our coaching, I guess, becoming an actual coach. Ryan and I have obviously been through the LTA system in terms of being a tennis assistant, and obviously getting, work experience like anybody. I can't remember if I did even get paid back in the day in terms of being a teaching assistant. I don't know whether you got paid. Did you get paid for assisting?
Certainly
not the same as everybody else these days. It seems like everyone's on minimum wage of about £15. I was on, if anything, £5. Yeah, just £5 note. Cheers for your session. Thanks. Interesting, obviously, speaking about our coaching journey. So, again, obviously, that was more in episode 1, how we started. And like you say, you referenced your mum there. I referenced my dad. And I think when I certainly first started and finished my level 3, which is obviously the DCA at the time, going into my first job, my probably coaching style was, as I guess any fresh person on a tennis court, I probably spoke too much. Probably just really filled the room, the court, in terms of obviously wanted to be high energy, really wanted to leave a good impression. Although, I'm delivering on a 2-court village club, and I'm thinking I'm at the National Tennis Center. But I guess that was kind of sort of how we were sort of taught to do it, weren't we? And that's sort of, I guess, my style of coaching, I guess, to start the point and hand it over to you in a second, I guess, to deliver how you started, I was probably very talkative. Not to say that's probably changed too much now, but I was very vocal.
Cool. I mean, yeah, it's, uh, it's, It's an interesting topic because I think, you know, when I look back in the day, well, mine obviously did the assistant. I can't, yeah, like you say, I think ours was like level one, level two, possibly. I think DCA was level, was it, I'm sure it was level two at the time because we had the assistant level DCA and then we went straight on to do our level four, didn't we? Yeah, I think, it's, you know, the system's obviously developed, isn't it? And it's tried to open up to different things. And in terms of my coaching, I'd say, yeah, I was a bit like, you know, I kind of started on a forecourt club, not head, obviously, as a system. And if I look, kind of think back, you always want to have that, you know, you always want to have the player and you want to turn players like instantly. I think it was like you wanted to turn people over quickly, kind of get their technique going really early on, don't you? And kind of hope you get the big rallies and you want to just push them on really, really quickly. And I think when I was learning my style, I suppose to a degree, I suppose I do a little bit now, but I think, yeah, like you say, a lot of talking, a lot of animation and energy. I think you definitely need energy. And trying to get them to do the fundamentals in ways which obviously demonstrates, illustrates, you know, showing them different routines, ideas. I quite like the ideas, the practicalities of it, you know, giving them visuals, giving them like learning tips. Was one thing for me, I think. But I definitely like moving to my level three. I think like it's the same sort of thing as you had, like talking a lot or, you know, over talking quite a bit. When I think back to my old coach and who kind of took us through our years, they obviously had the same thing. I think he was only a DCA coach, but he wasn't very technical. He was more kind of fun orientated. Let's set up a couple of drills and just play. Rather than, you know, going into the technicalities of the game or the tactics, you know. So it's interesting, I think, how different coaches kind of adapt, isn't it, to coaching scenarios and what their ideas and things are. But yeah, I think it's a massive talking point, isn't it?
Yeah, I think we're speaking, obviously, yeah, the start of that journey and, yeah, trying to remember 25 years ago in terms of how you deliver. But I think, obviously, our venue / head coaches, assistants, committees, whoever it may be, I guess they kind of structure who we were at the start. Or certainly, I remember vividly, certainly starting at my two court village club, I was given pretty good free rein in terms of what I wanted to sort of deliver in terms of a program. But again, always coming back to the point where obviously talking about today is that sort of coaching style, has anything changed? I think I was very much sort of, I guess, more... The balance between volume and quality, sorry. So, you know, do you feed lots of balls and get all the players hit in and just make like teaching points and what you're trying to do very minimal and just have like maybe one, or you go a little bit more down probably like the individual route, and obviously it's more detailed and more structured. So I think certainly remembering off of the back of my DCA, you obviously had that teaching point. We had to expand it and, you know, whether it's both back or one at the net and all the rest of it. And there was obviously quite an emphasis on sort of the teaching point and the technicalities. But I think me being as young as I was, obviously, I think I was 18, 19 when I did my level three. I guess I felt like I understood the game, but teaching at 18, 19, a, you know, an adult who's fairly experienced in the game, did I feel like I had that confidence to change a game and for them to trust me to change it? I think that's probably one of the big things mentally I had. I don't know about yourself, but, you know, people, you know, we feel comfortable to do it now because people come to us and we have experience, and probably that's quite a big thing in any walk of life. You know, the more experience you have, the better you'll deliver, and you obviously learn from your experiences. But I think for me, trusting myself with the knowledge I had, but then conveying the detail and how I want to change somebody's grip on a serve or swing path on a forehand, I think, yeah, I just needed to be confident at delivering. I don't think I was, but it probably came with experience. I don't know about yourself in terms of those first initial months and years in terms of delivery.
Yeah, I think like you say, kind of when you go first off to, you know, assisting, you kind of, like you say, you know the game, you kind of think, you know, you're kind of one of the best at the club, let's say. And so you've gone, I don't know, it wasn't, you had a lot of respect. I think that was the thing. So the people that you were teaching were generally younger kids that are looking up to you. So you were kind of like the role model. So you had to have the behaviours and that type of thing. I think that it was important to set out. And it did help that those kids you know, might have looked up to as a player. So they'd listen more, you know, all the behavioural sort of things that we have. They were fairly good at that stage. And then moving forward, DCA-wise, you know, once I've done that, I think, yeah, it's so hard to kind of track back, isn't it, and just think exactly what you were like. But one thing that vividly came out in my coaching style was, and I quite like it and I still use it today, actually, is just the idea of, you know, trying to get a player to immerse himself in like a video clip. So trying to think of, like, you know, zooming in into one particular part, and then we just play it, and then obviously expanding on it and getting wider and wider until you get to the game scenario, just open tennis basically. So that's definitely lived with me, I think, for the last, you know, 25 years or whatever, since we've done our DCAs and stuff. The styles, it's different for everybody. I mean, you know, we've drawn on a bit about how we set up classes, that type of thing. And I think back in the day, you know, we're looking at queues, like queuing, is it a good thing to have like long queues? And, you know, obviously, is it better to be just getting everybody out and about doing twos kind of drills, let's say, or threes drills on a half court? And I think we're probably going to come on to stuff like that, you know, in a bit. But it's certainly how you set up your lessons and how the coaching style. I think I was very much, especially with adults, I think I was very much a bit shy, not shy, but kind of uncertain, unconfident about teaching or delivering, because I felt that they knew more, even though they were coming into the game, if that makes sense. So you kind of think, well, they've, you know, they've already lived life, but actually they don't know tennis. They come to see you do your coaching and they want to learn from you. And I think, like you said, it's about being confident enough to believe in your own ability to bring out what you need to learn, you know, what you're trying to teach, let's say. So, but yeah, I mean, in terms of, like, you know, the styles of coaching, like, do you find your styles of group coaching, for example, are you more adaptable in the situation? Did you find that back then you were kind of maybe a bit robotic in terms of learning and how you structured your lessons versus now?
Yeah, I think, again, back in the day, 25 years ago, 20 years ago, I think obviously what you learn on tennis courses, DCA at the time, obviously our level three now, level fours, etc., you take possibly certainly at that young age as sort of like gospel. So again, sort of, as you well know, I guess when we did our level four, and they probably still do it, your introduction to like meeting somebody for the first time, child, adult, whatever it may be, they sort of introduce it as you pay points. So it's like an assessment period, which I'll hold my hands up, I don't do that now. And I don't think I ever really did. And it was very much sort of using, you know, I guess an analogy, like you driving test, you drive a certain way to get through the test. And after that, you've got your whole lifetime in a car and you drive how you want to, obviously be as safe as possible. I guess the tennis coaching was a little bit like that, rightly or wrongly. And maybe that's an area that needs to be looked at in terms of the LTA coaching pathway structure and how it's assessed. But I think really I preferred groups. Certainly, I felt like I could get a group of adults going. I felt at the early start, anybody close to my age or of a similar age, I felt like, oh God, same age as me, like, you know, feels a bit weird. I didn't mind obviously teaching kids in terms of groups. Adults, as you mentioned, a little bit tricky to gauge abilities, friendships, because I find that even today adults is a little bit tricky sometimes. There are obviously things that go on in life, and when somebody steps on a tennis court, we're making the assumption they're there for tennis, but they may have had a really hard day. And it's the same with the kids. And obviously, as much as we're tennis coaches, at the end of the day, we are trying to monitor players. So I think back in the day, I didn't monitor players very well when they came on the court. So I was very going to that sort of tunnel vision. This is how my session is going to go. They're going to do it like that. And if they don't play well or they don't quite get it, then yeah, less on me. I've done what I needed to do, rather than, I think I do adapt. And if, you know, a group is not really with it, you've got to sort of change it. Or if they're doing really well, you increase that challenge. And again, that comes a little bit of experience. Individuals, I think I enjoyed, I'd always sort of ask that first question, you know, what are you here to improve? What would you like to improve? And I still do that today as well. It's interesting, and again, probably a different podcast on this. It's very much if I came to you and said, oh, what do you feel like you need to work on? And you would say, oh, this, that, and the other. And then when we start playing, it's me then realizing actually you're good at that, but you're not so good at this. And you want to fulfill the expectations of players because they come to you with problems to solve. But actually, you need to tell them home truths as well, actually say, you're really good at that, but actually this, have you looked at this? And it's maybe not quite working so well in points. And they might be accustomed to that and be like, oh, actually, I've realized that in matches that's not been so well. Or so we're problem solvers, we're trying to help players in day-to-day lives. But I've certainly become more adaptable, I think, is probably the thing over the time. I think, yeah, as I don't know whether you agree with that, I think we've had to change because times have changed as well. We look back at safeguarding 25 years ago, how we deliver on a court probably has changed slightly. I'd like to think certainly my camps have changed quite a lot in terms of safeguarding. So it's a different thing, isn't it?
I think, you know, like you say, I mean, again, it's probably a topic to come on to in a minute, but in terms of like adaptability, when you start, you know, like you say, we're learning something and we're getting, I suppose the level three for me was quite a big step from the assistant. I think that was the big detail where you'd assist at the start. Whereas obviously when you get your level three, this effectively allows you to run a club. So it's kind of right. Okay. You've got everything coming in. And when all of that information came in, it was really good. It was really good to kind of learn new stuff. But like you say, you're kind of, I suppose, the LTA have to form a program that looks good, that obviously does what it needs to, shows everything. And I think that's what I was exactly the same. I was the same as you. I was kind of like, right, okay, I've got to have a teaching, you know, certain bits and pieces. It has to go like this and it has to sit that certain way. There's no other way sort of thing to run my coaching lesson. And then as you go through it, like you say, when you get more and more experience, then you go and do your level four, for example, then it takes up another notch of learning. Then you kind of learn that, like you say, there's a lot of people with different things that are happening with them in their daily lives, like you say. And yeah, I think maybe I really wanted kids, and I probably a little bit now, but more earlier on, is I really wanted to get them good quick. I think that was a thing, and I felt like if I, you know, trust all this, you know, the information we're hearing, and run it like that, then it's going to happen, you know. And obviously, I suppose it was a bit of a naivety in that instance, maybe from my end, that, you know, actually, maybe, you know, it does take a long time to get very, very good at our sport, and, you know, people do come into sessions with different thoughts and feelings about how they want their tennis to look like, if that makes sense. Don't know if you see that, if some people come in and they are quite social about tennis, they just want to be there for fun. Other people really want to get, you know, their world tennis number, as it is, it used to be the LTA rating back in the day, trying to get their rankings up, that type of stuff. So we're, like you said, we're using the word adaptability here, that we've got to try and, you know, come up with a session that is social, kind of has a lot of fun elements to it, but also has the more, it's not serious nature, but like, I know you don't like using that performance word, but kind of, you know, kind of going from social to more advanced tennis, if that makes sense. And I think now we're in this stage. Yeah, I think it's definitely adaptability's got to be the key word, I suppose. And I think it definitely helps them develop as well. Because I think, I don't know if you find, but in your coaching, you don't just become, you know, Andy the coach, you also potentially might become Andy the counsellor, you know, because obviously people sometimes offload their things and that kind of, you know, they might use rackets and smashing balls to kind of offload, or it might be they, you know, they use your style of coaching, whatever it may be, just to come in and want to kind of learn a new skill. And just to go on from it, sorry, is that we ask these, like you say, we ask the questions, you know, what do you want to work on? And this is probably maybe something to ask the question back to you is, you know, we all get that those players that come in and say, look, I want to work on everything. Well, obviously you've got, you know, in a group session or, in a, an individual, we can't make play. And I think it's important for other coaches out there to understand that you can't change somebody's game instantly. You might get lucky with a few, you know, a few bits, but it doesn't matter what coaching style you have. It's very hard to kind of make a massive, you know, uplift in their game skill. It's important for practice, isn't it?
Oh, 100%, 100%. I think I heard, I can't remember who said it a long time ago. Obviously, our sport, along with golf and other sports, potentially follow the similar phrase that I'm about to say. Is basically it's 1% taught and 99% learned. So at the end of the day, the products, call it a player, their shots will evolve because of the practice they put in. Don't they really, essentially? So, you know, I'm teaching your forehand or backhand, I'll give you the tools to make those better, but essentially it's up to you to make that improvement. Group setting, as you mentioned, it's the expectation, isn't it? You know, a lot of people come to group sessions and sort of expect their tennis world to change in a group of 1 to 8 or 1 to 10 or however many it may be, and we're sort of, well, actually, you know, you're paying for what you get, however much money that group session might be. And I think, yeah, as you allude to, letting other coaches know, actually, the expectation is, right, you're there to deliver a teaching point, maybe two, lots of volume, and for them to sort of give it a go. And it is very much up to the player to make changes. And I'm sure you and I relate a little bit to potentially golf, a little bit, a different sport where we're always trying to make improvements. And I play golf very sporadically. You play a lot more than I do. But every time I go out and play golf, my expectation is I'm going to shoot close to 90, but I play once every 3-4 months. I don't go down the range, so the reality is I'm never really going to shoot there unless I get very lucky. And these are kind of, yeah, the people that sometimes we see at lessons, and other coaches I'm sure across the country also see as well. You know, people rock up and expect to be able to hit a topspin straight away or hit a serve with a proper grip and, you know, pinpoint positioning with their feet. And it takes time. It takes time. And I think a lot of our business is to sell tennis and then for them to improve and feel like they improve. But also, we've got to be realistic with them. We can't mollycoddle people at the end of the session and go, oh, it was amazing. And we'll be like, oh, actually, you've made some improvements today. But we've, you know, got to make some improvements there. But talking of improvement, I think certainly moving on to our level 4, which we did in 2011 in terms of improvement of coaching, I certainly felt my coaching evolved then. That's probably when I really did change, and we did sort of that 6-7 month course over at Notts. We've got obviously quite a few tutors, different tutors, and every tutor had a different way of looking at it. And obviously we did obviously lots of mental skills and a little bit of nutrition, etc. And I think that really set the platform for my coaching, and that probably evolved to quite who I am today. You know, even though that's 14 years ago, I haven't really changed too much. So as you mentioned previously, game situations, I now try and feed a lot more differently in terms of positions, try and feed differently, whether it be a bounce feed or a topspin feed, or so trying to make it a little bit more game realistic, but not forgetting hand feeding's okay in front of them, trying to get the technique right. So I think the SPC for me, I don't know about you, probably really skyrocketed how I am today and how I've really evolved in terms of group and individual coaching.
Yeah, I think the jumps that we had were quite good, because we had level 1 was learning, level 2 for me was like a big jump, which was nice because it was a lot of information, maybe a little bit too much at times. But obviously then we kind of were probably coaching for a good amount of years before we did our level 4. So we were kind of established in understanding the game. And then, yeah, getting to level 4, I just think it just brought out more detail and the detail that we kind of need to know. And I think it's also, you know, moving on from that, it's now we're coaches of level 4. It's kind of, you know, it's always nice to learn. I don't know if you find that, but now you've got your structures and elements from that course. Like you say, you do your driving tests a certain way and then you adapt your own driving skill to suit your own version of teaching. And there's no, you know, particular great, like, best way of coaching, is there? It's one that works for you in order to, when you're working with different players, and actually, you know, how you teach players is different from one person to another, right? So, like, yeah, you say, from difference in feeding or in difference to how you set up the lesson to the kind of content you're teaching, I think that's really, you know, I think it's important just that they do learn, even if they're social or if they're, you know, competitive in that respect, they play competitions, they always want to be learning about something, even if they take one juicy bit of, you know, of information away that really made the difference. And then it's effectively up to them, isn't it, to kind of really, you know, dig deep and try and go and have a hitting session or go and practice and try and build that kind of skill. So the detail is, it's important. I was going to put a question back to you though, because I think, do you ever feel like then and now that you're, sometimes you overcomplicate back then to now, or do you still, you know, so when you're teaching something, giving too much information that makes, you know, adults in particular, I think I find that they are very much thinkers. They want to try and take everything in, and then, you know, do you find that you give too much away to, or not give much, too much information that kind of clouds their judgment or clouds their thinking? What's your take on that?
You know, great question. I think I'm very guilty still of probably a bit too much information overload. It goes back to my original point. I sometimes just put too much verbals on a ball and fill white noise, and I seem to be very comfortable to do that, and I really need like one of those electric zappers under my armpit as I'm feeding, and if I'm continuing to talk, somebody needs to give me a quick zap and might shut me up without obviously saying any expletives at the time of feeding a ball potentially. But I think, yeah, I think I'd like to think I'm better now, but if I saw a video of myself then and probably now, I'd probably be quite surprised in terms of my delivery. And I guess that might be a question to yourself in terms of actually truly we're trying to ask these questions, how we think we were 25 years ago and how we are now. And I'm I guess speculating a little bit, because again, it's without seeing a video yourself, you don't really know. But I think I spoke too much, and I probably do a little bit too much now still. I've still probably got that bad habit, but I feel like in the coaching world, we need to give instruction, like you say, and give quite a bit of detail. And, you know, whether that detail is relevant at the time or is too waffly and too much detail, then, you know, is less more sometimes. Is it some people come to group coaching and they really want the detail, and those people really need to come to individuals or small group coaching, whereas some people come quite rightly to groups, in my opinion, to hit a lot of volume of balls and just go, look, we're working on top spin. All you're going to do for the next hour is start your racket lower and see what you can do and have a bit of trial and error. And some people would be like, well, that's not coaching, we're just giving it a go. But we're setting up the exercise for you to hopefully feel that pattern of dropping the racket lower and feeling that success. And we want people to feel that. And that's where our intervention comes, and good coaches will do it. They'll allow you to almost fail first, but not jump in straight away. I remember always that from our level four, to actually let somebody hit a dozen balls, see if they can get it. Because sometimes they'll get it after a little bit, or after a dozen balls, 15 balls, nah, not quite done jump doing it right. Let them come in and jump in and help them, you know, shape a forehand, serve, whatever it may be. So I may be a little bit guilty of still jumping in a little bit sharp, because I want them to feel success quicker, because again, they want to have a good session. I don't know whether you do the same potentially.
Yeah. I'm much the same. I think I definitely used to talk quite a bit, and like you say, the feedback for me was one of my biggest takebacks. Is that, you know, I find that I gave a lot of information too early back then, and, you know, rightfully or wrongfully, you know, that is still, you know, good to give feedback and that sort of information. And I probably would say that it tends to creep in now and then, for sure, because it depends on who you're working with and how much their needs are for your lesson. But yeah, certainly that was one of my biggest ones, like giving feedback. I needed to feel like, you know, now I think I'd like to think that I let people play and try and engage it, you know, gauge their emotions, gauge how they're feeling, gauge how, you know, when you get to know the players a lot better, we can kind of, like we say, we jump in with what we think we need to jump in with, whether it's more information, whether it's a demonstration. And I think the other thing I was going to touch on is that, you know, like you said, you might be working on just getting your racket down for a minute. We've got to also still remember, guys, that everything is still, tennis is still very technical. and there's so many moving parts to all of our shots, all of our movements. And for you to get all of those movements perfect, I mean, even I would say, and you might agree, but even that when you watch the professionals, they've all got very, very different techniques, but they all just do it, you know, whoever's taught them has told them to do it a very consistent way that works for them, you know. So we don't see every player looking exactly the same, do we? Maybe call it a teaching style that somebody's given them, or a shot shape that somebody's given them. That's a coach's like philosophy, let's say. So it's important, guys, get out there and obviously to, you know, take that drop of the racket, or, you know, take it on board, have a practice, and, you know, just keep going over and over again. It definitely doesn't, if it doesn't work perfectly, we're picking the thing that we feel is probably the best bit to chuck into that part of your game. And hopefully make a big improvement quickly. Yeah, but there'll still be other things, won't there, that you'll have to add and in order to make it even more efficient, should we say. So I think we've kind of talked quite a lot about the styles and the then and nows. I think possibly, I mean, maybe I'm going to put it out there for you, is maybe we need to roll onto a bit of, you know, goal setting for next time. So like expectation and goal setting for podcast number 4.
Sounds good. Well, I have a potential, you know, just to throw the curveball, because we're unscripted. So I've got 2 choices for episode 4 for you. So I'll let you choose in a second. But just while we've obviously got a little bit of time to discuss it, I was just thinking a bit of a curveball to yourself. Let's say you started your coaching journey 25 years ago in obviously the UK. And then after 5 years, you got an amazing opportunity in Russia to teach tennis. Do you feel like the foundation of what you learned in the first 5 years would have molded you to a similar coach to how you are now? Obviously, again, we talk about environment and players, or do you feel like you would be a dramatically different coach? I'm using Russia as an example, just because obviously Russia are pretty notorious in terms of obviously being pretty hardened and, you know, really sort of bringing players on and really being like stern. But yeah, use Australia, USA, again, any country, I guess, in the world. Do you feel like you would have been a very different tennis coach and taught differently potentially had you moved away and then stayed there? I know you did a coaching stint obviously in Australia for a little bit, but probably not long enough to potentially change style. Just a bit of a curveball question to you, really.
Yeah, no, that's a good question. I think I think how we learn here, I suppose you're asking is, you know, whether what we've learned from our courses would be sufficient enough to work worldwide. And I definitely think it has. Yeah, I think going from like even from level 3 to level 4, I think, you know, we could, with the way that we coach and the way we've learned our processes and we've adapted. I mean, 5 years. Like 5 years in, did you say, to coaching?
Five to ten. Yeah.
Yeah, I think certainly early years, after like let's say level three, are we talking about here, or are we talking about level 4? Come on,
you're getting really in depth now.
I need to know.
Okay, you've just done your level 3, and you've been given this amazing opportunity.
Yeah. Okay, so yeah, no, I think I definitely have a sufficient amount of knowledge and understanding of the game and how to coach it. I think we talked about adaptability. I think that would be the only thing, you know, moving to a different country is just adapting to their cultures and their ways of life and doing that. I mean, word in question, you know, bless, we teach people of all ages, but I was in America coaching and I had to coach a 94-year-old, which is an unbelievable feat, by the way, on a tennis court. You know, coaching that. But obviously, as you'd imagine, mobility wasn't quite as it once was, and you had to hit balls straight to them, and he wanted you to do it from the baseline. So he had his first lesson, and he didn't want to come back to me because we didn't have the biggest lesson, but I had to adapt. This was obviously in America, and he was so set on his goal that he needed to hit shots. So I had to up my coaching game. I had to say, right, okay, let's have one more, give me one more chance. Let's have a go. And had our one more chance. And we ended up getting 20, 25 straight rallies, which was amazing. And he's a really nice guy. But I suppose that in a nutshell is probably what is my answer would be, I suppose. Yeah. Basically, yeah, I had the knowledge, but I had to update my skill level, let's say, to make it work. How about yourself?
Yeah.
Would you say last minute or so?
Yeah, I'd like to think I certainly would have got core. I think the level four for me was certainly the turning point. So had I not gone on that and been in a different country, I think, yeah, I'd be a different coach. I think I'd probably be to my surroundings and pick up different things like anybody. So episode four, Ryan, I'm going to give you two choices. We can either, so I feel like we've gone like quite a lot about us. So we're now going to change the world. Are you ready?
Ready.
So episode four can be, we're a brand new tennis nation. We've got, let's say we're Antarctica. We've got unlimited funds and we're setting up a new tennis culture, you know, performance center, how we restructure the growth of the sport. Let's say there's lots of people living in Antarctica as well. All right. And how we're going to structure it. So we're going to be the national government body and what we're going to do. Or we're starting with a lovely little three-year-old and how you and I would get that person to a national champion. So that's episode four. Which one would you like to go with?
My goodness. They're two major different.
I know. We gotta be a bit unscripted, and we gotta give the people listening a little bit of like our thoughts and opinions on stuff now.
I think most relevantly, I would say the 3-year old getting them to a national champion. So guys, tune in for that, because unscripted, we're gonna be talking a lot about that.
Sounds good. So Ryan and I, 3-year old to national champion, how we do it.
God, that's gonna be an interesting conversation. Oh, great. Anyway, well, guys, thanks for listening. It's been great to speak with you, Andy, about these topics, as always.
My pleasure, as always. Yeah, pleasure.
And,
thank you.
Look forward to catching up next time.
Thank you, guys.
Take care, all. Love.